Originally constructed in 1941 as a 774-unit complex, Orchard Park housed primarily Irish-American and African-American residents in the early years. Orchard Park, also known as the Albany Street Projects, was initially segregated. The majority of the buildings were occupied by white residents. Voice of Valerie Shelley, president of the Orchard Gardens Resident Association.
There was 14 of us, and we all were raised in Orchard Park, right in the project. And a lot of people came here to hang because it was more of a community. So if you hear people talking about Albany Street Projects, they didn't call it Orchard Park. They called it Albany Street Project because everybody hung on Albany Street in front of 902. That was the hangout, especially for teenagers at that time. So we all gathered there, people from Ruggles, Grove Hall, all the surrounding areas came and hung down here. So you hear people talk about Albany Street, and that's where everybody came. That's where you met your boyfriend, you met your girlfriend, whatever. Everybody knew each other. Everybody knew each other. It was really a community type of, you couldn't do anything. By the time you got from one side, your mother already knew what happened. Everybody's mother knew everybody's kid. So everybody looked out for everybody.
By 1969, Orchard Park was 89% non-white, and like other Boston Housing Authority developments, experienced increasing neglect and disinvestment from the housing agency. Despite trouble with drugs, crime, and long-term neglect from the city, many residents, including tenant leader Edna Bino, retained strong community ties and fought to regain control over the project.
Edna never left. She stayed. And she was, she worked for the welfare department. She moved up to be a supervisor. She was well paid. She had a great job, but she refused to leave the development. And I kept saying to her, Edna, why are you staying there? Each building had 12 units, four on each floor, so it was three floors. And by the time they redid the development, Edna's building had three families. Hers, she was on the third floor. Another family was on the second floor. And the Harrises lived on the first floor. But they never left. They stayed. And it was a group. Dorothy Young, my sister Edna, Cynthia Harris. Oh, Johnny Bowden fought and got the Hope 6 grant. Bill McGonigal was working for BHA at that time, but he wasn't the director. He was working in BHA. And he helped them do the paperwork so they can, and he went to Washington with them, and they fought, and they got the Hope 6 grant to redo the development. That's how the development was redone. I could not believe how dissonant this development got. I'm telling you, you could actually walk down the street and hear people's feet. That's how echo it was. That's how big it was around here. And I used to say to her, Edna, the money you're making, why are you got your kids? We're not going nowhere. They're not moving me out. And she met with the developers. The first thing she said, no bricks. And that's why you have the colorful houses with the backyards. She said, I don't want any bricks. And that school, she said, I wanted the acres for that school because our kids, at that time, our kids from this development were bused to 35 different schools from K to high school. 35, can you imagine, 35 different schools just from this development. And she wanted a school for the elementary kids to walk to. That's why the school was orange. And actually, I sat on that design team. She developed breast cancer. And I took her to all her appointments and stuff. She was fine. She was very active, still active then. But when she was getting sick, the only thing she kept talking about, you know, she sent me to the meetings because I had to go to catch up so she'll know what was going on. So I started going to meetings for her, and that's how I ended up getting involved. And then when she passed, I said, Val, you got to keep this up. You can't let them win. Edna will kill you. She will haunt you. You will not be able to sleep. So that's why I continued the work I did.
Voices of Fernando Dominic and Alberto Cardenas, architects of the Orchard Gardens redevelopment.
She really held that place together. There was a lot of stuff going on there, and really she had the hutzpah to face guys sometimes who were not that nice, and essentially say, you know, we're gonna stay here, we're going to save this place, or we're going to make it a better place.
The residents and these leaders helped to bring out the best in the community, and they had a very important say in who gets back in. We brought in the concept of neighborhood streets, which were really absent in the old planning. This is an integral part of the Hope 6 program and all that theory that was around it. So a street introduces a notion of a place already, a place for people, a place for cars, and it introduces the idea of a front door, you know. We introduce the concept of color in the buildings and differentiating the buildings, though they're repetitive. Some of them are row houses. There are a lot of them, most of them are row houses, really. How do you differentiate that somewhat by architectural features, varying the roof lines, varying the window patterns? But color is a big, big differentiator, and we use that, I think, to maximum effect, to individualize where you live. You know, mine is the blue one. Mine is the yellow one. Front yards, side yards, the rear yards, creating places that people can inhabit and feel that they own it, even though they're renting. And as you go into the units themselves, we try to create places for getting, gathering inside the family or guests or friends, kitchens that are, you know, decently sized and with a good, a lot of times it's an eating kitchen type situation. And a number of bedrooms that will allow people some independence and privacy within the family, depending on family groups. So we design efficiency apartments, one bedroom, two bedrooms, three bedrooms, four, even five. So it's all based on the expected population and what their needs are.
In the 1960s, Lower Roxbury faced multiple challenges, which prompted the Boston Redevelopment Authority to consider urban redevelopment in broad strokes. Voice of Adalberto Dixiera, DS&I activist in resident.
In 1976, I lived in Roxbury by the intersection of Dudley and Adams Street, and then later on I moved to Dorchester. And I have been in the United States for 39 years. All my life has been spent in Roxbury and Dorchester. So I lived just outside Orchard Park. Now it has a different name, Orchard Gardens. At the time it was Orchard Park. The housing was really poorly maintained. You know, from outside you could see broken windows, broken doors, which meant a lot of those units were not occupied. So there were squatters coming into the building, lots of drug dealing, you name it. So it was a very, very sad situation to live through.
The Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative formed in 1984 as a response to the neglect and disinvestment facing the Dudley Street area of Roxbury. DS&I appealed to the Boston Redevelopment Authority to gain control over much of the vacant land in the area known as the Dudley Triangle. As a result, the organization became the first grassroots organization in the nation to gain the power of eminent domain.
My first experience or first involvement with the Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative was as an interpreter. I had a full-time job somewhere else, but when Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative came to our neighborhood and started doing outreach and engagement for residents, they wanted to do it in three different languages, Spanish, Cape Verdean, and English, and those were the three major constituents or races or ethnic groups, whatever you want to call it. So I was asked to come and do interpretation at a large community meeting at St. Patrick's Church in Roxbury. That was my first learning, my first introduction to DS&I. As far as my involvement with DS&I, I think the proudest day that I saw, proudest moment, was the day that DS&I gained the power of eminent domain from the city of Boston.
Through the Community Land Trust, DS&I has transformed 30 acres into affordable housing, urban greenhouses and farms, playgrounds, parks, and businesses.
One thing to keep alive is that there is always room for improvement. There is always room to create a better environment for the children that belong to DSNI or to Roxbury.